Who has questions? Dan, a question.
Back in the late 70s or early 60s, 80s, I was hearing a lot of rumors about the Grateful Dead pouring some money into R&D on optical optical technology, and especially Alembic came up in those rumors a lot. I was wondering if those guys ever visited you or you had any knowledge of that.
What I heard was it was going to be some kind of crystal square, cube, or pyramid or something.
A sugar cube kind of.
Yeah, that's what I thought of when I saw that article about it. I remembered that too. You don't know anything about it?
No, I do know that there were a number of people in the, well, going back to the late 60s that were thinking about a transparent cube. And then lasers coming in on two axes to interact at a particular spot. It just doesn't work.
Well, it didn't work, evidently.
Yeah.
No.
When you were working with the audio side of it, you mentioned that you were working initially in 12-bit and then went up to 16-bit, is that correct?
Well, I never went 16.
Oh, okay.
The prototyping that I did was with what we could buy off the shelf in our instrumentation, A to D, and I think it was 14 bits. Stockham developed his own A to Ds, which were 16 bits.
And what sample rate were you using?
He used 50 KC. When I was doing it, I was using... I guess 15.
15,000?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Which is convenient because of the line rates. And the idea wasn't to get particularly good audio necessarily, but just get something that works and prove that it will work.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of hear from human side, human perspective, what was the one single moment that made you sort of think, we need to get away from this vinyl thing? Was there anything that happened that day? Or yeah, was there anything?
Well, yes and no. What actually happened was a shoe store. I'd been tinkering for years, trying to get a better sound and trying different pickups and different coatings to put on records and various incantations to the record player to try and, of course, none of that really worked very well. And I'd been thinking of various ways of doing it and doing an optical record, and I was thinking about the FM or the PWM type process. And but then one Saturday, my wife took our three children to the shoe store to buy shoes, and I recognized that I would have the whole morning to myself, absolutely to myself, and put the whole thing together.
You know what day that was?
No.
One Saturday in 1965.
Early.
I don't think what I was doing one Saturday in 1965. Not that.
Anybody else? Ken?
Yes, hello. I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of your presentation, but what I can surmise from looking at the photo of the actual artifact, that you strike distinct sort of tracklets down. So I imagine that those are probably differentiating some kind of time. So I'm wondering, there must be some form of buffering that was happening internally. And if so, I was wondering how much buffering was actually used.
Didn't have any buffering. You're talking about the record?
Yes, for the... What we were looking at, was that only for the video frames? We're seeing each stripe corresponds to one video field or frame?
Are we talking about the slide that showed all of the sequential...
Yes, I'm wondering in terms of continuous media, like audio, if there was any gap in the time.
Sure.
what those parks were a composite of 66 television lines per arc, and with horizontal blanks in between each line. The audio was digitized and put into the horizontal blanks along with various other codes. So it was a sampled audio system at 15 odd filters. And we did have a buffer in that case in the playback so that we could have more or less continuous audio signal. I'm not sure I answered the question.
I'm a little unsure how the recording was continuous over the 66 line stripes.
Oh, do you mean getting from one stripe to the next?
Yes, I'm wondering if there's any time difference, or were there multiple lasers recorded?
Okay. So the what I had was a scanning wheel with four objectives in the face of the wheel, and the distance from one objective to another was the width of the card. So we had an arc for each objective, and the optics were set up so that it was, from an optical point of view, continuous. One and the next one was following on, just on the next track right behind it.
Yes,
I see. So you had 256 lines, essentially, is that what you're saying?
I had 66 lines, 66 television lines.
In each band, and
in
then
each
you
band.
Had four. Oh, so it would just keep. See, one would read one, and the next head would read the next band, and then the next head. So. Right.
So the motion
like
of the
five video recording.
The motion was consistent.
Yeah.
It wasn't
yeah.
stepping. It was just.
No. It was continuous.
Like
it could have been stepped, but we moved.
No, that's a much better
stepped.
Idea. What you did.
Yeah, because the precision of stepping it would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
I'll agree.
Did the middle mirror rotate?
Yes.
That's
on the end.
That's the way you got the laser from one side to the next.
Right.
There's a pyramidal laser that bounced it back.
Right.
Sure.
What happened to pursuing video? Were you never able to clean it up enough, or did it take that? I mean, because ideally, laser discs, which is pretty much the continuation of what you were studying, didn't see Zoom application until around 89, 90. So, was that just abandoned, or why did all of a sudden become an audio centric sort of product?
Laser discs were in the late '70s.
But they were FM, they weren't digital TCM.
Right. No, I'm not quite sure.
Well,
let's see again.
Okay, so the audio CD came around a long time before. Well, consumer audio CD came around, I'd say, roughly 10 years, in my understanding. Before
it came out maybe 82.
Okay, before a consumer video CD or laser disc.
Right.
But you had been working on video, so I was wondering why. What took so long to.
Oh, I see.
What happened in between that time period?
Well, as far as our doing it, we ran out of money. And so I took care of that. Would it have, your question really is, would it have been possible for someone to have produced a DVD in the 1980 time frame?
Not necessarily a DVD, but an optical video disc, yeah.
There was one. There was DiscoVision.
Well,
there was
at the beginning in the early 70s, there was an analog video disc. Which used a combination of FM and pulse width in their modulation scheme. And it was a big disc. It sort of worked all right. But
worked better than VHS. Did great trick
play. I still use mine.
Yeah.
Did you think you'd live to see the day where your invention had become as big as it is and literally replaced all that came before? I mean, I was telling other people I have nephews and nieces that don't know what a record is or a videotape.
Yeah.
And they're not going to grow up knowing what that is, and it's all because of your thing. Did you think you'd see that?
I'm sorry about that.
Your fault, quantity's closed. Yeah.
I thought it would be on the market a lot sooner than it was, really. Things take... The inventor's idea of how long it takes to get something on the market is doesn't have any connection with reality.
Right.
Certainly not in this case.
So did the CD comes out in 82. You're working on your approach. Were any of your patents used in the development of the CD?
You bet.
And were they acknowledged and recognized then?
They paid royalties.
Well, eventually. That's acknowledged. Eventually.
Yeah. After the court went. After they got sued.
They had to be prodded.
But not to you, right?
Not to me.
Seems to me I've heard of cases in the past where people have, maybe even when the patent ran out, where they've got finally monetary recognition.
Oh, sure. In this particular case, the owner of the patents told everybody in the business in 1986 that they may be infringing. So the clock starts running at 86. And it may be 100 years before you sort it out, but...
When was one of these significant patents filed?
The first one was filed in 1966.
Never good for 17 years, I think, back
17 years. It issued in 1970.
Never good from when they were issued or when they were filed?
Issued.
Issued, well, at least you got that.
In those days.
But so just at the very, very edge, did they even... say anything or start anything?
Yeah, well, actually, what most of the royalties were paid on was the synchronizing system, which was the last of the significant patents for audio. The multi-layer record was later yet, but still too early for DVD.
Mike had a question.
Getting back to the just touch of reality part, did you guys ever, or would it be fair to say that you probably never even considered the Pandora's box of copyright when you were involved in this?
No.
That would be my guess. It probably never entered, you know, what do you think about that from the invention standpoint?
Well, there were some problems in the early days concerning patents and how to deal with them, and I don't know that copyright was ever raised, but we, for example, did not raise the question of a submarine patent, which would have been very profitable if we'd done that. And in fact, even without going into submarine sort of a process, if we had continued at the start, if we had continued to file patents on modifications and changes and additions and so on, it would have extended the life a lot and covered a lot more territory.
What do you mean by submarine?
Oh, sorry. Well, it's kind of underhanded in respect. What you do is you file a patent, but then before it issues, you file another continuation in part, or continuation of the first one, and then you cancel the first one, so it never issues. And then it's another couple of years for examination of the continuation that you put in, and just before that issues, then you put in another continuation and cancel that one. So you can extend this along for many years, and it's called submarine because nobody knows that this technology has been patented.
and they continue doing whatever it is that they're going to do and start marketing whatever, and then all of a sudden you allow your final patent to issue, and then you sock them for $1 billion for infringement, which they didn't know about.
Yeah, because it's good when it's filed, but not when it's issued.
But then you have prior art because it's with the patent office, and they've already got prior art, so there's really no question that it's prior art, so that you really can sock them.
Yeah.
But you've got to have an idea that somebody is doing something to make something out of it, right?
Oh, sometimes it is that, but we could have justifiably done some of this in this case. If you think that you're too far ahead of the market or too far ahead of the technology, then if you go ahead and patent, then the clock is running on the expiration of the patent, and you may never be able to sell it because it's too early.
But you have to have the idea that there's going to be billions of dollars there. Did you have that idea?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Early on, you thought this would be worth billions of dollars?
The original idea for a music player, okay, that was going to be nice and it would solve my problem. But once I started working out the details, I realized that, hey, this is good for anything, any kind of information. And
yeah.
Yeah, it was.
So we could have had a square CD.
I'm sorry?
We could have had a square CD.
Well,
compact square.
Yeah.
Compact square, yeah.
Yeah.
That was really a very clever way of handling it.
Thank you, I'm fine to agree. But my original thought was, yeah, I thought about a disc, but then once I kind of calculated out how much area I was going to need, I thought that indeed a 3x5 card would be a fairly good sort of format, and that struck me as a lot better than a 5 or 6 inch disc because it's more efficient. And you can put it in your pocket. You can file it in a regular filing cabinet. If you've got an automatic magazine changer, it's a lot easier to do with just switching cards. But Phillips had a different point of view.
Yeah, right.
Don't need a hole in the middle of it either.
That's right, no hole. And no corners to lose. And so constant speed. There's a lot to like about the rectangular approach. But they knew about spinning records. That was their business. So, all right, they're paying for it.
There's a question.
Actually, that answered it, because I imagined, did you think people were going to go into stores and buy these square things as opposed to the round things? And just answering the question, I was thinking, when you see the development of flash technology, like for example, just yesterday and a year or so ago, little machines, you can store a gigabyte of data on like a solid state card. You must think about, wow, somebody was maybe thinking about this 10, 15 years ago, and it only just happened. Is that possible that technology has been filtering for such a long time, with the little flash cards, or they just reappearing in the market?
Well, I don't think it was. It's been on. No, that was thought of, I think, a long time ago. It was just the technology, manufacturing technology of getting high enough density on silicon to make the whole thing work. I can't really say when the genesis of that would have been, but. Maybe 5 years ago.
So in order to do a patent, you couldn't, when your patent ended 17 years or so, is that when they would end? You couldn't just file for a new one, other than like the submarine was the only way to really keep your patent ongoing, basically?
No, it's not like copyright.
Okay.
Yeah. In principle, when the patent runs out, you can make a case that you have not been able to profit from this patent because of something beyond your control. The market wasn't ready, something wasn't appropriate, and then you can apply to Congress to get a
Yeah.
Extension.
It's a reissue.
Reissue.
Of the patent. And that's not easy.
You have to individually apply to Congress, so Congress has to act on your specific.
Do you know if it's ever happened?
Yes. Oh, yes. The most famous case is, for a reason that I can't explain, the Daughters of the American Revolution have a plaque that they have patented, and that gets renewed every 17 years.
It's not copyright, it's patented?
It's patented.
Is that a design patent?
I suppose it's a design patent. I don't really know, but Congress takes care of that.
So every time somebody wins a plaque, the Daughters of the Revolution get a 10-year Any questions?